You're listening to Have Mike Will Travel with Elizabeth Santry.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth. Welcome to the show. This podcast is about creativity, the professional aspects of creativity. Well, you could also say it's about creative thinking. You see, a career in a creative profession typically means carving your own path and making a lot of important decisions alone. And when competition is fierce and the market's uncertain, getting firsthand insight can really help. Join me as I interview full-time creative professionals and ask them to reflect on these really important moments in their career. Each episode, my guests open up about significant and sometimes even subtle choices that have led to their success. I know it can feel lonely out there, so I hope you find their stories as inspiring as I do. That's the sound of riding shotgun in an orange 1970s vintage Volkswagen Combi. This episode was recorded in Melbourne. These VW microbuses are highly coveted in Australia. My guest, comedic writer and actor Jess Harris, happened to inherit hers. And as if in perfect visual harmony, her bright red hair actually matches the color of her Volkswagen. She was cool enough and offered to pick me up for the interview, which was a great start. And I have to say, I could draw a lot of parallels between her car and her personality and her humor and her work. It's just bright and fun and easy to enjoy. It's not over the top. It's just really charming. So we took a short drive to her house in Melbourne and we set up in the kitchen, and pretty quickly we started chatting like old friends. I thought this was a great interview, even covered some topics I don't necessarily feel like were discussed in previous episodes, so I really hope you enjoy.
Well, thanks so much for having me. Also, thanks for the ride. That car is sweet.
I felt pretty happy to pick you up.
That's awesome. Yeah. The hospitality. I have to say, the hospitality in Melbourne has been pretty cool. Yeah. I've been really, it's just like a vibe, you know, it feels really welcoming, and I've liked that so far. So it's really cool that you're, you know, living it out.
Yeah. Oh, good.
Keeping it real.
Proud of Melbourne.
Yeah. So you are from Melbourne.
Yep.
So sometimes when I travel to cities that are, you know, major competitive creative cities, it draws a lot of transplants. But, you know, so they have a different story about coming to the city.
Yeah.
But you have a different perspective. You're from here.
Yeah.
And what has being from here done for you creatively, like the impact of the city?
Well, yeah, I guess that's all I've really known. And I love Melbourne. I love living here. And I think I sort of re-appreciated how much I love living here from going away. I've done quite a bit of travel over the last couple of years and spent a bit of time over in LA. And every time I come back to Melbourne, I feel that's really grounded. I feel like this is, you know, where my family is and my friends, but it feels really balanced. And that's what I love about Melbourne, is it's got a real balance to it. The other thing is, I mean, just because I've grown up here, I've got a really great group of friends that are all really creative.
Well, not to make you sound unique, but it seems like that seems to be the story for a lot of people, that this is just a highly creative city, and that people just naturally become creatives, and you know, and that's just sort of the way it goes.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm from a city similar, so I think maybe that's why I'm kind of like feeling this comfort here, because it just sort of makes sense to me, even though visually it looks completely different from what I'm used to, but there's something about it that I just sort of get. I don't know, that I like. So how was, with school, did you always know that you were funny? How did the school, experience for you growing up here?
So when I was at high school, I was sort of not very good at sitting still, not very good at listening. So I was always sort of acting up and running amok. But again, I had an amazing group of friends. I guess I was sort of really nurtured creatively there as well. And I think my family had a huge influence on that. Is when I was growing up as a kid, for one of my birthdays, I asked for a microphone for my birthday. And we could actually never get it to work. The plug wouldn't work with the stereo system at home. So I had so much time just playing with a microphone that didn't work. I used to do stand-up shows for my sisters, not plugged in. I could have just got a broom, but I felt like such an exhibitionist. But I just naturally loved doing all that. So I used to put on plays at primary school. I used to come back from lunchtime and say, can we just scrap the classes for the rest of the afternoon and I'm going to put on a performance.
Did it work? Did they let you?
Yeah, they let me. I went to a really, really small sort of odd primary school. It was, and they let me get away with things like that. But I think my family is what influenced me the most. My dad, especially, always told me I was funny. I think that's huge. Yeah.
You know, being affirmed, you know, and being allowed and told, you know, because I tend to ask people, I'm starting to get more into like ask people about like, when did you find your people? But it sounds like from day one, you may have been like having the family who gets it.
Yeah.
And you don't have to explain.
No, it was really nurtured, and wanting to be a creative and wanting to do that sort of stuff was the ultimate goal, because my dad was a real performer and I think wanted to do that more and didn't sort of do it. So I was maybe like sort of living a little bit of that out through us, because I've got three sisters and we're all very creative, and it had been nurtured so much. Like on a Friday night, he used to set up the video camera and just play music, and we would dance in front of the camera, just freestyle. And then when we watch back some of the tapes, I mean, it's highly indulgent, I know, but for us, we thought it was hysterical. And my older sister's a really great dancer. The one in the middle, she used to mirror everything that she did. And then I was always in the background just doing odd stuff, like wafting in and out, doing really odd stuff.
Yeah.
So I guess maybe like that would have had an effect on feeling confident in front of camera, feeling free to sort of just be expressive. And if we had a funny character that we wanted to do, or, you know, reenact a scene from a movie, he would just set up the camera and we would film it. I've got footage of me reenacting a scene from The Princess Bride. Do you know The Princess Bride?
Of course.
Best movie. Absolutely. The Battle of Wits. And me and my sister reenact that. And I've got my baby sister tied up as the princess with the blindfold and a knife to her neck. So I think that was my life.
Like, was that the Inconceivable scene?
Inconceivable, yeah.
Classic.
Yeah, Battle of Wits with the arcane powder. They didn't know which cup it was in.
Yes.
So that was normal to me, that sort of stuff.
Yeah, so as I say, because you have a confidence in being funny, which is really admirable. It's really great. I mean, I think in society sometimes you are reassured to be humble, but I think that sometimes it goes too far and you end up just not being able to actualize or talk about what you're really good at.
Yeah.
And so it sounds like you've got a confidence to be funny, you're allowed to be funny, and it was nurtured, you actually got to develop it.
Yeah.
Starting early, and you didn't have to like wait to figure it out. So that's really fantastic.
Yeah.
And so there's like I always think there's just like a power to humor.
Mm. Mm.
So did you go to school for this, or were you self-taught?
Well, I would say, self-taught. I think, and in just touching back on what we were talking about, and that having like a really nurturing, I think when I went into my early 20s and left high school and didn't know where to put it into, there wasn't like a course to go to, I sort of lost a bit of that confidence in it. So I just did a lot of, you know, part-time work. Mm. I traveled, I went overseas and just threw myself at life. You know, a lot of my friends went off to uni, and I found that really hard because I sort of didn't have something really clean and clear to say when people ask me, well, what are you doing with yourself at the moment? And I was just sort of, oh, I'm doing this, I'm doing that, but that doesn't define me. So then I guess me and my best friend Josh, we always say we feel like we put ourselves through our own uni, because we decided that we were going to learn by experience, because I'm not very good at sitting down and learning the theory, and you can tell me something quickly and I'll absorb it, but then I need to put it into action straight away for it to sort of go into long-term memory. So we have a community television station here, and this was probably about 8 years ago now, I decided I'm going to make a show. I'm going to make a show because then I can learn what I'm good at, learn all aspects of it and learn on the ground and teach myself the skills, so then I can and apply for jobs knowing that I have a skill set. So I had some friends that worked in the industry at the time, and I said, can you just send me a call sheet and a script template that I can mock it off? And so I just ripped that off, and I just, you know, I wrote about what I knew, which was just struggling to find my voice, being in my 20s, being lost, not having any cash, but having a really good time with your best friend. So that was me and Josh, and the show was called 20 something. So what we would do is I'd write an episode, call sheet it out, get everyone we knew, all our friends, to just be in it, shoot it in 3 days with one of our best friends. He just borrowed a camera, and then we would edit it and then repeat the process until we had 6 episodes. Right. Yeah.
So not a strong strategy, just throwing yourself into it and just figuring it out as you go.
Totally. I had no idea where it was going to end up, what it was going to do, because I was genuinely doing it for the purpose of learning. And so the end result was not the focus.
Because there's such a freedom in that. Yeah. I think I'm currently reading a book about failure and just, you know, or just how to be creatively, you know, how to think and get problem solving. Because I find that just to be such a huge element of creative thinking.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be literally the creative arts. It's creatively thinking through something.
Yeah.
And I love that attitude that you take, because the freedom to fuck up.
Yeah.
Because there's so many gems and so many worthwhile things to understand when you do it wrong.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think that's really great. And then, so it just went from there?
It went from there. So we then, like, we made 6 episodes. By the time we made the 6th one, it was about over a span of 2 years, you know, because we were, we were working, doing other things. And Josh is a freelance cameraman, so he would go on trips and he would travel and he would come back. So we tried to do it as quickly as we could, but life gets in the way, and also we completely self-funded it. So I was waitressing and doing a whole lot of other jobs in order to pay for it. So we, by the time we got to episode 6, episode 1 had dated because it had been about a year and a half. So I was like, we've got to put our best foot forward. We've got to reshoot episode 1. And we saw it as a big pilot. Like, when you get a chance to shoot a pilot to test out what works and what doesn't. And by the time we got 6, we knew the tone, we knew the characters, we knew the voice. So we're like, all right, let's start episode 1 from that knowledge. And so we reshot it. And then I just called up this community television station and said, I've got 6 episodes here. I want to get it on air. How do I get it on air?
But I love that you took the time to go back and reshoot, because I think there is a pressure. Sometimes you feel like you have to fit into this, like they call it, like psychological time, where you know, have to be competing with everybody else, getting things done. And you could probably were itching and scratching to get it shown and seen.
Totally, yeah.
And the fact that you had the resolve and the patience to say, this is what the show deserves.
Yeah,
that's totally really great. Yeah. I mean, that's a real cool, like, work ethic and style and approach, because I think things are so rushed nowadays, and because you can put something together so quickly, I think people who don't know what it went into it assume that you just, like, slapped it together.
Yeah.
But to reveal in a moment like this that, like, no, that was 2 years of developing, and then going back, being willing to scrap all that hard work in the first place and start again, that's really cool message to explain to people what it takes to get seen.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that, because it did feel like we were both looking at each other sort of tiredly and went, oh, we can't. Because you only get one first impression, and if we think, oh yeah, but we want to get to the better ones, you got to start strong. So we aired on, and this was a while ago, this is probably about 8 years ago now, so this probably would have been an online series if it was now. You know, we would have gone straight to a web series.
Which I feel like someone just throw you a mini parade for that in general. I mean, because to do stuff, you know, I mean, I'm not trying to age us, you know, but the truth of the matter is, like, a lot of people that I interview are on that crux of getting going initially when there wasn't the support, there wasn't the digital era the way we know it to now.
Yeah.
And having to do things what was then, what now seems the hard way, but it was the only way.
Yeah.
So there you are. And then, so how, that's what I want to know is, like, how do you find yourself to get exposure when there's not this major way of the internet?
Well, we were just lucky that it sort of got a bit of a following, and it got some really great media attention, some really great articles where people noticed it. And it was a bit of a story at the time of people doing the do-it-yourself approach to television. So it was just on the cusp of when it was starting to change. So we were able to use that story, our personal journey, is what got a lot of the media attention.
I see.
So, like, these two are really best friends in real life. They're making a show about struggling and trying to make it. And that's exactly what we were doing. So it was a life, you know, whole life imitating art sort of thing.
Yeah, it's a Seinfeld of 20-something.
So they bought into the story of our friendship, that I think they let go, that it was not perfect and that it was, you know, really rough, but people liked that it was raw and that we were giving it a go.
Mm-hmm.
And we had some meetings with some people that were making shows at the time and production companies, and they said to us, you know, a lot of people come to us asking advice on how to get a show on air, and they want us to just sort of fund them. And we always say, get a camera, shoot something.
Right.
And they're like, not many people do it. So it straight away, proving that you're going to work, that you're willing to work, and upskilling yourself like that was just put ahead of the game.
Yeah.
And we were able to show what we were capable of.
Absolutely. I think that's nowadays what you have to do, is you have to do it yourself, which can be daunting to people, and I get it, but that sort of separates the bullshit from the real quality.
Yeah.
If you're willing to, you know, put yourself out there. I mean, for me, a personal note, like this, this is so meaningful to me to be here, because I actually reached out to get crowdfunding because I literally ran out of money. I was doing as much as I could on my own. I get what you're saying.
Yeah.
Eventually you do need a little help. But it's just the idea of, you know, hopefully crisscross, like, you know, getting noticed.
Yeah.
But it's showing what you can do on your own, because if you can do this with no budget, imagine what you can do when you're being funded.
Yeah. Exactly.
So that must be what they saw.
That's what that's what happened. But it wasn't until a year later we thought maybe that would be that sort of a little bit more instant flow. But what happened was it was on air, got a great response, and that was that. We really celebrated that was a success. That was enough. That was great. We both went on to do some other little things, and it wasn't until Josh was applying for a documentary on ABC, which is the network here that it showed on, that he had a couple of episodes in his showreel, and it happened to be the head of comedy saw it and said, well, what's this show, and why don't I know about it, and let's talk about it. So it was like off the shelf, dusted it off again, and so it doesn't always look and move the way you think it's going to be. It doesn't work like this clean way. And I think it's almost like as soon as we let go any other expectation, it happened. I know that sounds really corny, but it did.
No, and you know what? Sometimes I think things get written off as being corny because they're said so often, but because they're so fucking true.
Yeah, it happens. Yeah.
You know, I think letting go of expectations and just working to work and working for the pleasure of working and letting the universe, whatever you want to call it, kind of find its place for it.
Yeah.
I think that's awesome.
Yeah. And so that sort of reinvigorated it, and we got accepted into they were doing a call out for narrative comedies, and they were going to commission three of the six projects that got picked. So we were one of the six projects, and then we were one of the three to get commissioning. But they ran a workshop weekend where they got a whole lot of top writers from interstate and around Melbourne to sit down with you and workshop your idea. I think even though it was like a short condensed time, it was a really, that's where we met our producer, Nicole Minchin, who we then went on to work with and produce the show, and where I just got some validations, just because we sort of felt like we were just kids that came out of nowhere that just were, you know, fumbling through it, to sort of trust in that simple ideas with the right intention, and that, I don't know, it just doesn't have to look slick, it doesn't have to be polished, but if you've got something raw there.
So when did you know about your style, like your specific style of writing and comedy and humor and performing, like when did it hit you that you're onto something and this is true to you and it works?
Working with your best friend, you want to make each other laugh, so we always kept it like you're making each other laugh, doing what was honest to us. And I wrote what I knew. And one of the best advice I got given at that workshop weekend was, don't create it, retell it, because life's funny enough. And I feel like that gave me permission to just draw on things that had happened in my life and things that had happened to my friends. And sometimes you can't script that stuff. Like, it's just ridiculous. So I felt like my style is very simple. It's observational, because I just love human behavior and the way we act. And I've spent a lot of time working in hospitality, and I was sort of a frustrated waitress. I used to overhear a whole lot of conversations and just find humor in those things. Mm-hmm. So I didn't try and veer too far from that. I just kept within the realm of what I knew, which was just finding human interaction funny. My friendship between me and Josh, we have this really non-conventional friendship, and it sort of was heightened versions of ourselves. And we found our style by just playing with it, giving it a go. And so I write everything, we perform it together, and then we edit it together. So in the edit was so much of where the humor was built, because I don't know, when you edit yourself, you can see, oh, that's off, I'm pushing something there that's not there, and you just find the moments that make you giggle, and sometimes you can't understand them, but you just sort of go with it. So I think we really just found our style through trial and error.
But being willing to be wrong I think that's cool. I think that's what you have to do. Also, I wanted to ask you about just like the idea of seeing yourself. I think when I interview creative people, majority of them aren't in the position that they look at their work, but their work literally isn't them. Your work is a literal representation of you and what that must be like, because I definitely don't know much about it. And I think it's just really compelling. Like, that's a whole other journey.
Yeah.
What's it been for you?
I feel like I can disconnect and see myself on screen as something completely different. I'm probably my own harshest critic, and I always want people to be brutally honest with me. I think a lot of the time performers can get kept in a little bit of a bubble where they get told it's great and it's all there, it's not a problem, and then the director goes behind their back and go, well, she's fucking choking, and that was the worst performance, it was so wooden. And it's like, I never want that, and that's why I tried to learn all aspects. So Josh and I are quite harsh with ourselves, like we're pretty brutal.
So having a best friend as a co-worker,
yeah,
you must get some serious truths out of him.
But just before the show came out, we used to sort of have a couple of wines and write, well, verbalize fake reviews, like, and say the harshest things we could. It sounds really destructive, but say really harsh things about, like, these aging hacks are fumbling through this self-indulgent display of, you know.
This is like a skin-thickening practice.
It was, but it was, but we laugh. We have, I think that was maybe a bit of our sick, dark humor coming out.
But I think it's actually really, that must be really relieving and sort of cathartic, because basically what you're doing, it sounds like what you're doing is you're basically digging into, like, your most, your biggest insecurities, bringing them out loud. And by doing that, it almost sort of takes the monster away, because you've like brought it out and been like, well, now it's been said.
I've heard it, I've said it, and it's probably just something I'm thinking, you know. And I think you only get hurt by the ones that hit on any some sort of truth. When it's something that's sort of like so off the mark, it's laughable. But when it's something that hits sort of the truth, so you go, well, let's say all the truth, let's say what it can be, and then just move on. But I mean, that makes it sound like we're really negative. We didn't focus on that too much, but I do think being in control of the editor and the writing from a performer's perspective, because then you can pick and choose the takes that you're happy with and that you always intended in your head to do. I mean, a lot of actors sometimes walk away going, fuck, that wasn't it, but I didn't get another chance to have another go. So, yeah.
So we had a chance to chat real quick because you so thoughtfully picked me up from a coffee shop. And it seems like we have a similar attitude about, like, women's role in the arts and stuff like that. And I sort of joked around that I've heard this sort of like negative aspect that like women can't be funny and just that kind of nonsense. And so do you feel forced to have a stance about it or to acknowledge it in some way? Like, how does that?
For me, I get like really nervous about having strong opinions on anything because I think everything's so fluid and changing. I get really cautious to sort of say, this is how it is. This is how I feel.
And I feel like the feminist movement can be intimidating to people.
It's really intimidating. And
it's a shame it shouldn't be, because it's really, it's just so simple. It's such a simple value and a simple idea.
Yeah.
But I completely sympathize. Yeah. I know what you mean.
Yeah.
It's just, you can't make everybody happy, and everyone has their own vision of what it means and what it is. And some people study deeper and academically, and some people just try to live it. Do you know what I mean? So where do you fit on this?
Well, I think that, like I said, the fact that I get nervous about sort of having a conversation about it, sort of something I observed in myself, where I was like, I'm almost scared to have an opinion because there is a lot of backlash on that.
It's a shame.
That's a shame, and that's a part of it. So it's like I just try and focus on following what I want to do for me, being as fearless and as confident as I can. Yeah, not focusing too much on things I can't control, but just and hope that it doesn't matter whether I'm a guy or a girl, but that people just sort of enjoying the work. And I know that there is realities of guys and girls that and it being different.
But I think, for some reason, I feel like in society, the reason I bring it up, because I really don't even want to discuss, like, make a call a woman out and be like, how's that for you? And not bring it up to a guy. But there is something about comedy that you can just feel it. You don't even know how to say it, but you can feel it that it just seems like more of a rough road. I mean, so that's why I was just wanted to bring it up in the first
place. Well, there was one sort of thing that we spoke about when we went into the edit of the first season of the show. And I remember the editor and some of the executive producers saying, look, we really want to track the likability of your character and make sure that it's, that the audience is on her side. Which at the time I'm like, completely, like, I get that and I agree with that. And you want that with anything. But it did feel a bit more like, because my character is sort of a bit brassy, outspoken, and sort of strong, I at the time just wanted to be as likable as I could be. So I'm like, let's track that. But you have to remain bold as well, because I did wonder about whether or not that was because I was a girl and being that sort of bringing up, because it seemed to be a lot of older middle-aged men that I challenge. But like, I think Josh, again, my best friend in the show, was so fiercely supportive of me being as wild and outspoken and sort of loosey-goosey as I am in real life. So he really held strong in that, and having him there sort of always pushing me, he's like, go bigger, go more. Don't hold back. You know, like,
amazing.
Really, really. Where would lucky we be if
Roseanne Barr dialed back?
Yeah. You'd be like, do you think Melissa McCarthy thinks yelling's not funny? Do you think she's holding back?
Would
you?
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah. And I do think that I am happy about it, quite not aware of those restrictions, because again, I grew up with three sisters And my dad like raised us to be really strong, really outspoken and adventurous. And I never felt that from a young age. So I think sometimes maybe I did grate up against some people, guys and girls, because I sort of was like, knew what I wanted and was unapologetic of that. It wasn't until sometimes I got in the industry did I sort of think, oh, fuck, there is a bit of pushback on some things.
Yeah, and here's the thing, that the challenge I'm identifying that you're dealing with is that not all creative fields have to have this likability aspect, because at the end of the day, you're putting on a show that you need people to view it, and so you need to sort of pay to these people or like play to them because you like it. It's audience dependent, you know what I mean? Yeah. Some people have the luxury of, you know, being a photographer for a client, and just as long as the client's happy, these four people, then it suffice, and they've done a good job.
Yeah.
But here you are in a position where you need to make the masses like what you do. So that's got to be a bit of a head trip that you have to try to stay uniquely yourself and fierce, independent. Yeah. But at the same time, you do have to win people over.
Yeah, it was a big lesson, and it was something that I really learned, and the balance that we found was perfect. You get surprised as well by who is drawn to different characters. You know, you got to be careful not to say, oh, you might rub these people up the wrong way, or blah, blah, blah. And so many middle-aged women that I thought would find me really obnoxious and horrible love the show. And they're like, you're me when I was younger and all this sort of stuff. Yeah. So, I mean, at the end of the day, I just tried to be as truthful as I could be, do what I thought was funny. And yeah, when you're editing and you're telling a story, you got to track likability of all the characters and have that extra emotional hook. I think going back to talking about style, that was a style we had in the show, that it was not just funny. We wanted it to have heart as well, and we wanted it to have, ultimately it was the story of friendship, and it's about sort of looking at non-conventional relationships, because this is a guy and girl that are just friends, and it, having heart is what I think made it successful as well, because it wasn't just sort of trying to be funny and was based on a reality, so it had that extra. I think we just wanted people to want to hang out with these characters at the end of the day, even if you don't find them funny. We just want them to be like, well, these are sort of fun people to spend half an hour with, and fun friends. Yeah. You know,
do you have any, I'm sometimes curious about work habits. Do you have any like silly rituals or habits between you and Josh to keep the flow, the workflow, the creative flow going between the two of you? Maybe the review thing, the mock review, that sounds hilarious.
Yeah, the review thing. And when we were going, I just remember this, when we were editing the show, we used to have fake speakerphone calls with people, and then we got a whole lot of our friends in the show, and if we were editing a scene with them in it, we would pretend we were like these big wig producers or directors, and we would get them on speakerphone, not really, but pretend, and rip through their performance. Probably shouldn't admit that, but I think we found release in being really ridiculous and reminding ourselves to keep humor in it.
Yeah,
because I must admit, it's really, really hard when you get in the throes of working with a friend, keeping the fun alive.
Absolutely.
And so in season one, it was sort of you're trying to prove yourself, and you're stressed, and there's a lot of responsibility, there's money, there's stuff riding on you. It's hard to keep that playfulness all the time. And season two, we just made that our number one priority. Like, we have to be having fun, and we have to have each other's back, and that will come through in the show, and I think it really did. And now that's our biggest thing now when we choose new projects is what's going to be enjoyable, what's going to be the most fun.
Because the two things that offers is A, quality of life, which
quality of life, exactly,
important. Just like, or your non-work life, you know, that you're coming home not boxed up with all this shit on your shoulders.
Yeah.
But also, I feel like when there's an authenticity and you're in the fun that you're having behind the scenes, in making it, it's got to shine through in the work.
Yep.
So that's really cool.
Totally. And you got to be enjoying it, because it gets to the point where it can't be fun all the time. It's hard work. But,
right. But an expression that I've stumbled upon, I thought was really great, because even with anything, even if it's a love project, you'd be surprised how it can be frustrating at times.
Yeah.
But just to remind yourself, the love of the process. Like, I have been sort of reminding myself of that, because it's funny how you can get your nose out of joint over one little thing. Like, I didn't hear back on this email. This is so frustrating. And you're like, whoa, you love what you do. Like,
exactly. Control what you can, work as hard as you can, and you got to let the rest flow a little bit.
Yeah. So the show's on iTunes now?
Yes. Yeah. You can get season one and season two on iTunes.
Amazing.
Yeah.
So that's really kind of putting you guys in the bigger picture.
Well, now we're got the internet, not back in the Channel 31 days when we're just on community television. And also we did a little web series that bridged the gap between season one and season two, because there was quite a big gap. And in the end of season one, the characters went on a Europe trip. And we got the chance to actually go to Europe for a 10-day whirlwind trip.
Amazing.
And film six little 90-second webisodes that we released online in the lead up to season two being released. So they're online as well.
So YouTube and like you have like a channel?
We've got a Facebook page.
Okay, yeah, because I've seen
Facebook
that.
Page, yeah.
And they're all stuff on YouTube. Yeah, because I just want to make sure on an international level people can see. Because you said it's a show. This is a strictly Australian channel and all that. So I just wanted to see the availability.
And it's very Melbourne. It's all set in Melbourne and it's that sort of vibe. But we've got some friends over in the States and we've got some people that run on the Facebook page in the UK and things like that.
Yeah.
That somehow.
Oh, no, it's don't get it twisted. It's not like site specific. It's a very easy, like digestible humor. It's fucking funny. You know what I mean? You don't have to worry about that.
Oh, and we found out just recently it's playing on Qantas. So if anyone's flying Qantas Airways.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
Oh, that's really
cool.
That was
a huge buzz. Josh was online on the flight and he found out because he was flicking through the channels.
Shut up. That's really cool.
So he took a picture of the screen and sent it to me. I was like, squeal.
That's like a musician hearing themselves on the radio.
Yeah,
that's
it was cool because it just gives it another life, you know.
That's really awesome. Well, thank you so much for having me. This is a really easy breezy combo.
Yeah, it's lovely.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. Be sure to share your support through comments and reviews.